let me in. Shiba shiba, I wanna be closer to you. Shiba shiba, open up your soul. Shiba shiba, let me find that part of you, the part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your love.
Oh, why don't you let me in? Let me be the first to ever touch your mind.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. We've got a packed show for you today. We're going to be speaking with the people from Reef, and we're going to be talking with a bunch of people. It's going to be great. So why don't you stay tuned, and I'll have our guests in just a moment.
Living is cold as ice, or warm with wonder, and oh so nice. Innocence is on the line. Be careful how you spend your time. You can't deny there's a force of evil. Look out for them, dirty people. Can't deny there's a force of evil. Watch out for them, dirty people. Look out for them, dirty people. They make you think that they're your friend, and then they stab you in the end. Jealousy and the other deadly sin, it's a battle that you can't win. Look out now, a force of evil. Watch out for them, dirty people. You can't deny it's a force of evil. Watch out for them, dirty people. Look out for them, dirty people. Out for them, dirty people. Look out for them, dirty people. My papa told me, and he told me true. Be careful what you say and do. Two roads ahead, you take the easy one, and bad company will lead you on. Can't deny there's a force of evil. Look out for them, dirty people. Watch out now, force of evil. Look out for them, dirty people. Watch out for them, dirty people. Oh yeah, dirty people everywhere. Better watch your back now. Stay out of the sun. Plenty of sunshine.
Yoko Kanno and the Seatbelts. What Planet Is This? From the Cowboy Bebop soundtrack CD. Before that, Johnny Nicholas, Dirty People. That is from Living with the Blues. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO, San Francisco. You know, a lot goes on in this world, and there's a lot of people out there who are doing things to help other people. One of those organizations that does things to help other people is the Richmond Hermit Aid Foundation, and they are doing a one-night-only benefit. Here to talk about it, my friends, is Ken Henderson. Hello.
Hi, Marilyn. Good to see you again, or talk to you again.
Good to talk to you. So for our listening audience who isn't familiar with the foundation, give us a little bit of background about it.
Well, the Richmond Hermit Aid Foundation was founded 32 years ago by two moms who lost their oldest sons to AIDS. And we started off as a strictly HIV/AIDS fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
And in about 2015, we've expanded, and now we're doing, we also fundraise for hunger programs, homeless youth, and underserved seniors. And we do it all through the production of entertainment events.
Excellent, excellent. And you get a lot of really high-quality entertainment coming through. How do you secure these acts that you keep getting?
Well, this is our one night only benefit cabaret series, are with the Broadway touring cast of different shows.
Mm-hmm.
We've worked with about 60 different casts now that have come through the Bay Area.
Wow.
To produce these shows. And sometimes we have two shows that are here at the same time, we'll do a combined cast. But these are really special because the cast get to do music of their own choosing, nothing from their show.
Mm-hmm.
But you have these highly talented performers who come through these shows. And a lot of times you have a few leads that sing all the songs, but you have a really talented supporting cast that never get to have their moment to shine. And these shows give them a chance to get up and show what they can do.
They really
have a great time. They're high energy. They're so much fun.
What's a number that has been performed that got you jumping off your feet? Like, oh, I'm so excited about this number.
I think every show has numbers like that. It's so hard to pick and choose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're you've got the showstoppers, you've got comedy, you've got a little bit of everything. You know, you've got song and dance. Some of the have been so creative in what they've done that mm-hmm. you just don't know. One particular one that I was impressed by was the cast of Jersey Boys.
Mm-hmm.
And they put together a medley with all the leads singing I don't know the title of the song, but it was like Macho Men series of a medley of songs about macho men.
Oh, I like that.
But, yeah. So, it was really, really creative. So it was so much fun.
So who do you have this year?
Well, besides the cast members from The Notebook, we have special guests, including Jason Brock, who was a final contender on The X Factor
mm-hmm.
a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We have Leanne Borghese, who's split her time between San Francisco and New York.
Mm-hmm.
She's won the Mac Academy Awards in New York and done a really amazing stuff. And for the first time, we had Dan Ashley, ABC's newscaster, who also has his own band and sings around town. He'll be the first time for us, and looking forward to see what he can do.
Oh, wow. So were you surprised to get to hear, like, oh, this newscaster has a band?
Well, his musical agent had contacted me a few years ago and told me about it.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have quite the right fit for him through some of our shows. Most of our stuff is kind of like Broadway-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan is more earthy, kind of not sure how to classify him, but, you know, more earthy kind of rock band and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So do you...
He has a new single that he's releasing, so he's going to be debuting that as well.
Ah, so, first time thing.
Yeah.
So when you put on these shows, do you know beforehand what numbers they're going to do, or is it a surprise to you?
Well, we find out usually about a week or two before. We
work
with the cast to sort of put together a running order to make sure the show works well and that... we know what they're doing. We don't want to have any surprises. They're like, I shouldn't have sung that.
Okay.
We've only had that happen a couple of times that we weren't aware of what they're going to do. But we work with them to make sure that it's going to be a show that has, you know, a flow to it, really works, and mm-hmm. is really fun.
I'm curious about the ones where you were like, they shouldn't have done that.
Well, let's just say they got a little loud. Too risque.
Oh, okay. Well, since you know some of the numbers that are going to be done, what are some of the things that the audience can anticipate hearing?
Well, I don't have this particular playlist just yet. They've run numbers by me, but I haven't really seen the final list yet. So.
Oh, okay. So it's going to be a surprise.
Everything is all about love. It could be, you know, romantic love, platonic love. Bad love, love gone wrong.
Got it.
All that kind of stuff.
All right. And it's the cast of The Notebook. Now, is The Notebook a musical?
Yeah, The Notebook was actually first a book, then it became a movie.
Go on.
And this is then it became a Broadway musical. And it's won lots of awards on Broadway. It
mm-hmm.
just opened in San Francisco this week. And so people will probably start hearing more about it, you know, through the publicity. There's the Orpheum Theater. It's going to be playing at. And, it's been lots of great reviews. It was fun and an amazing cast.
So okay.
We're looking forward to a really talented group of people.
Well, who are some of the people that are going to be performing? Do you have their names?
I don't have them in front of me, but you know, it's like I said, you've got the leads, you've got the backup cast, the extras who don't really get the chance to shine much,
mm-hmm.
and it's amazing sometimes what they do.
Well, then let our listening audience know when and where, what time, and how they get tickets.
Yeah, this is going to be Monday, February 23rd, a week from today, 7:30 p.m. at the Marines Memorial Theater. Yeah, and they can get tickets. You can either go to our website at www.reaf.org, or the direct link for tickets is ono-thenotebook.eventbrite.com.
Okay, and then how often do you do these? Do you put on these shows? Is it just once a year? Is it several times a year?
It depends on what Broadway shows are coming through town that are here long enough. It used to be the Broadway shows would all be here about a month. Now sometimes they're here for 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, occasionally 4 weeks. But we do like two or three of these usually a year.
Oh, okay.
And we have our big Help Us on the Way gala coming up this summer. And we also do a very different show. It's the West Coast version of Broadway Bears. If you're not familiar with that,
I am not.
New York City, it's like one of the biggest burlesque-style strip shows. And we do the West Coast version here, which is going to be in June.
Oh, awesome. Well, I want to have you back to talk about that.
Yeah, that's going to be really fun.
Excellent, excellent. And one more time for our listening audience, when and where, and the name of the show.
Sunday, February 23rd, 7:30 p.m., Marines Memorial Theater.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Ken, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Okay, people of Earth, this is your opportunity. You're supporting a worthy cause. You'll hear some great numbers. You'll be super excited and happy for everything. And it's really a good cause. Hey, how about we listen to a little bit of the Buena Vista Social Club, shall we? Yeah. Ciao.
En el barrio La Cachimba se ha formado la corredera. En el barrio La Cachimba se ha formado la corredera. Allá fueron los bomberos con sus campanas, sus sirenas. Allí fueron los bomberos con sus campanas, sus sirenas. Ay, mamá, ¿qué pasó? Ay, mamá, ¿qué pasó? Se ha formado la corredera. En el barrio La Cachimba se ha formado la corredera. Allá fueron los bomberos con sus campanas, sus sirenas. Allí fueron los bomberos con sus campanas, sus sirenas. Ay, mamá, ¿qué pasó? Ay, mamá, ¿qué pasó? Thank you.
cantar.
Buena Vista Social Club, El Cuarto de Tula. That is from Buena Vista Social Club. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Who's about to touch your mind right now? Well, there's a fabulous musician coming to town to the Keys Jazz Bistro. Here to talk about his upcoming performance, I'd like to welcome Brian Charette. Hello.
Hi, Marilyn. Thanks so much for having me on. I love that song, too. I play that in a salsa band I play in. That's one of my favorites.
You know what cracks me up about that? It's like when I first heard it, I was just dancing around. Oh, it's so great. But it's about a woman burning to death in a building. But it just sounds so upbeat.
Oh, no. I didn't realize that.
Exactly. It's like it's so upbeat. And you're like, oh, okay. See? Because the candle fell over in her bedroom. And it's like,
well, I feel bad for her.
I feel bad for her, but great for us because it's a great song. It's a jammer.
It's a song.
Okay, so Ben, tell us a little bit about yourself. How long have you been a musician?
I've been a musician the whole time.
The whole time?
I've actually never done anything else.
Wow. When you were a kid growing up, were you, did you have a tendency to want to do music, or did you come to it as an adult?
My mother is a very good piano player. Mm-hmm. She was a school teacher. She wasn't professional, but I had a piano in my house, and I would just sit there and play it all day long.
Ah, so it wasn't a surprise.
At a very early age.
So it wasn't a surprise to them when you said, I'm going to be a musician.
Well, that came a little bit later, but I started to take piano lessons from like 7 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And by 15, I was working a lot in music. So,
okay.
Yeah,
so
I'm very fortunate for me.
Okay, and because your mom is a school teacher, she was familiar with jobs that don't pay much, so she probably encouraged you to do well.
Who says that I don't do well?
No, I'm saying that's what I'm saying. She understood it.
I'm joking.
So what? You're playing at the Keys Jazz Bistro. Tell us a little bit about the types of the subgenres of jazz that you enjoy doing, or do you do the whole range of music? Because you were in a salsa band.
I do everything in music. I play all kinds of music, mm-hmm. but my specialty is the Hammond organ.
Ooh.
And Keys is kind of a specialty club for this because it has a beautiful organ there. It's run by a very good organist named Simon Rowe. He also plays piano, but he's very friendly to Hammond organ.
Mm-hmm.
The whole Bay Area is very friendly to the Hammond organ. I'm sure you know Pete Falico, who's a DJ, plays a lot of organ music.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm also playing with on guitar Jeffrey Burr, who was my first guitarist in New York 30 years ago when I first moved there. He lives in San Francisco now, so when I go there, we get a chance to play together. And he's a brilliant guitarist, and drummer is Eric Garland. The group's been playing for about 10 years, and we play in San Francisco once a year.
This
is our concert next Thursday.
Very cool. So since you're playing the Hammond organ, are there certain songs that are sort of associated inextricably with the Hammond organ, or are you all over the map? Like, this is going to be the Hammond organ. You know, we're putting this song into the Hammond organ and this song in the Hammond organ.
We do that. I do know the traditional Hammond organ repertoire. We will play a little bit of that, but my compositions are a little more futuristic. But we still stick to the Hammond organ tradition for sure.
And what is the Hammond organ tradition?
Well, it's a long story. The Hammond organ is invented in 1929 by a gentleman named Lorenz Hammond, who was from Chicago of German descent. And it became a popular instrument. It was supposed to be an alternative to pipe organ. In 1955, it got very popular with Jimmy Smith, who I'm sure you know. He's considered kind of the godfather of the organ. They added a feature called percussion, which makes like a plink sound. And Jimmy Smith was very much known for these kind of horn-like solos on the organ. So after 55 or so, it became pretty popular jazz instrument.
Cool. And then was the Hammond organ your first love, or were there other instruments between it?
I was only a pianist. I didn't play Hammond organ at all until I moved to New York in 1994. And I was starving because I was just a pianist in those years. And I had to take Chitlin Circuit road gigs with blues musicians in the South.
Okay.
Something came out called a Hammond XB2, which was kind of the first modern digital organ. So I got one of these. I was living on St. Mark's Place in New York City. I was actually living on a building of the Led Zeppelin album Physical Graffiti. Do you know that album?
I do.
So that's St. Mark's Place. I got this thing delivered to me. I was very young. I think I was 21 years old. I just got my first credit card and maxed it out. And I'm unpacking this digital organ in my kitchen. As I'm unpacking it, somebody called me to play a gig that night on Hammond organ, which I had never done before. But I'm holding it in my hands. It was right down at the end of the block. And I say, yes, I play the Hammond organ. I started to play at that place, which was called the St. Mark's Bar. And I met a lot of musicians that way. Then I started to play in Harlem a lot, which had a very thriving Hammond organ scene. And that's kind of how it happened.
I love that story. And so you're coming here. You're going to be playing at Keys Jazz Bistro. So when and what time are you going to be there?
Okay, so we have two sets.
Ooh, yay.
Thursday, February 26th at 7, and Thursday, February 26th at 9. You can get the tickets right from the KeysJazzBistro.com website.
And do you know if people can walk up and purchase tickets if they go? Can they do that?
Yes.
Yay. And if people want to find out more about Brian Charette and all the things that you do, how do they, you know, stalk you on the down low?
I'm very easy to find. My website, BrianCharette.com, has all my information.
Excellent. Well, if there's one thing you want our audience to know before we part, what would that be?
I love the sound and the vibe of Keys. We've been there before. The Hammond organ is great, and this band I've played with is really special, and we always have a very good time at the shows. I love coming to San Francisco to play.
Well, thank you. We love having you. And with that, Brian Charette, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Marilyn.
And people of Earth, this is your opportunity to go check Brian Charette out. And because he mentioned Jimmy Smith, you know I have to play Organ Grinder Swing. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. That was Jimmy Smith and Organ Grinder Swing. Hey, it's 12:35. And remember how last week electronics was evil and mean? But the person who I was supposed to interview was gracious and kind. So they are able to come in this week to talk about the exhibit that they've got going on. I'd like to welcome Trina Michelle Robinson. Hello.
Here with you in person.
I'm so happy to see you. We're laughing because, you know, something always has to go wrong and her seat is slowly sinking so I can barely see her. It's hilarious.
It's so funny.
So, this is great. So, Trina, tell our listening audience a little bit about yourself and what you do in the world.
Yeah. So I am an artist. I'm a visual artist, interdisciplinary. I primarily focus on film, but I also work with printmaking, moving more toward installations. So creating, it's like world buildings with a sculptural component. And make my own paper using fibers related to my ancestry. So like, for example, I went to Cameroon and got some palm fronds collected from there. And I came back and made paper using a long, laborious process, but it's all about that process, like getting close to the materials and just getting to know my ancestors actually through the materials, because I don't have a lot of family photos and deep lineage stories and details. So I trace them through materials and just walking in their footsteps. So
okay, I have a ton of questions before we even get to the exhibit. So I want to start with, how do you know your people are from Cameroon?
Yeah, so like so many people are doing these days, I've taken those, taken a DNA test. I've actually taken two of them, and I do kind of want to take a third one, but I'm all a little bit concerned about like having my DNA out
right,
there.
Right.
But there's like the African American, or I think it's called like African Heritage. There's the one that's focused on like African American DNA. That's the one I really want to do.
Okay.
But yeah, I've taken DNA tests, and I've had a large percentage in, well, like maybe like about 10% it was in Cameroon. It does adjust based on the number of people who end up getting into the pool.
Right.
So it changes every few years.
Right.
But Cameroon, Senegal, Mali, Ghana, and Nigeria is like one of the largest. But Cameroon, I happened to know people who were going to Cameroon, a group trip.
Uh-huh.
We actually all went to Senegal and the Gambia several years earlier in 2020. And it's a wonderful tour group that focuses on people who've taken DNA tests and want to go visit their ancestral homeland. So, but we did it through food. So we were exploring our ancestry through food, which is one of the best ways to get to know who you are and just people in general.
So did you know your haplogroup when you took the DNA?
Well, yes. And I'm kind of forgetting the actual haplogroup, But yeah, I took the DNA and I got the whole breakdown and everything and and it's basically, So I think from Cameroon, it might be 9 to 10% at this point.
Okay.
So in Senegal, I think at one point it was more 15, and then it went down to 7, and Mali went up, and Nigeria is always 30%, 25 to 30.
Wow.
So
that's great.
Yeah.
I love that, because when I did mine, it was there were the original peoples, and then there was that first branch. That was me, the first branch.
See?
Are we related?
Oh, we could be. Ah. That's what I'm saying. And that's a wonderful thing about these DNA tests, because when you can, I watched that show Finding Your Roots by Henry Louis Gates. So it's wonderful when you can see people who are who share a line of DNA, a strand of DNA. And it's wonderful to see how wild and easy that can actually happen sometimes.
Yeah. There was a show many years ago. It was the Genographic Project. It was this guy was able to, they were able to figure out that there had been a foot trail to Australia that was disappeared, but it was DNA that revealed that people could do that.
Absolutely. That's why I was so surprised when I saw a lot from Mali. It was Mali and Senegal, which are right next to each other. And there's the migration, and it could have also been unfortunately, slave trade, too. But people from Mali who were in Senegal, and that's why at one point it was so much from Senegal. But I think the more people were taking it, I had a larger appearance of DNA from Mali.
Right. Because more African-Americans have disposable income because it really is based on if you have enough money.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
that is true.
Yeah. For the longest time, I was I had the least amount of Neanderthal blood of anyone there. Mm-hmm. And then there's now one other person. I was okay.
One other person.
But
that's how it goes.
Okay. So you go to Cameroon, and how do people respond to someone from the United States? You know, that they do they even know the history?
It was really wonderful, because again, it was an organized tour group. So it was about 20 of us, and same for the first time when I went in 2020 to Senegal, and I went to Cameroon in 2023, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And people are very hospitable. They really are so excited. For the most part, I didn't have any negative experiences. They're just happy to have people come back and take an interest and acknowledge that history there. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people have an idea that a lot of Americans are just kind of I don't want to, there's a disconnect that they're okay with. And no, they're so happy when they see people who are really interested in knowing who they are.
I once read this account where someone went to one of the African countries, and their translator was telling them something, and then everybody got really excited, and they were like, what's happening? And they said, I just told them that you were taken from us, and the children have now returned. You were able to come back, and that's how they saw it, as people who were stolen away and were able to come back.
Absolutely. And that's what I think I experienced that a lot when I was in Senegal. For the most part, it was really wonderful, because pretty much everywhere we went, and this was in 2020, pretty much everywhere we went, it was a French-speaking country, but people would, a lot of the locals were like, okay, no, I'm going to teach you the Wolof word.
Uh-huh.
They're like, okay, so you're trying to do French, thank you, but now let's go deeper. Let's speak Wolof. And they wanted us to be able to get to the actual mother tongue. If you're coming here, so then let's really do it. And it happened everywhere. Wanted us to know the local word, local language.
Okay, now we're going to pivot to paper, because I love paper making. I've done it maybe twice in my life.
Oh my gosh.
Once 30 years ago, and then once 2 years ago. And I find it fascinating. So you went and you got palm fronds or something?
Dried palm leaves, but dried, not from the forest floor. I did go to an area where we were on a forest floor with palms all on the ground, and I was going to take those, but then I was also, that would have been a no-no. That would have gotten in trouble at customs for that. So I knew I could be able to get local dried palm fronds in the country.
Is it like taking things from the petrified forest? They just don't want you to do
it. Yeah, they just don't want you to bring anything. local. Yeah, and they're really, now I understand when they go, when you go to customs and they ask you, did you visit any agricultural areas? Yeah. You know, like what, you know, and they look through to see like exactly what you brought. That that's a real thing. And I, so that's why I was fine to take dried that, that I got in the local market. So they had like, you know, just like bundles wrapped up.
Sure.
And so I bought, I brought back a suitcase of those.
And so you said it was a laborious process to deal. And this problem, I don't even know what you're, we haven't even gotten to your art yet, but I'm sorry about that.
No, this is great.
So let's talk about how do you deal with palm fronds to turn it into paper?
That's an amazing question. So it's not just like, you know, when you make paper out of recycled paper and you can just put it in a blender and, you know, do that and add some water. This is a much more laborious process. So you just take the bundle and then you cut them each into like 1-inch pieces.
Okay.
And then you cook it in soda ash or lye. I don't use lye because I just have trauma from childhood straightening my hair.
Yeah.
So I use soda ash. It's not as hard. It takes longer using soda ash, but it's, it works wonderfully. And I'll cook it.
For how long?
Like over the course of several days. So I'll like, I'll cook it for several hours and then I'll let it sit in that same pot like 12 hours.
Okay.
Then I'll cook it again for like 3 to 6 hours.
Wow.
Cause like palm fronds is much, it's much, it's harder. It's harder.
Sure.
You have to, it's harder to break down.
Okay.
So, then I'll, so I do that process over several days and then I use a Hollander beater, which is a way of making it into a pulp, but it really, prepares the fiber in a way that is going to be much more fine and easy to work with.
Okay.
And then I, so I make the pulp using this big machine called a Hollander beater and then do that for like maybe 2 hours, have it like you lower a blade and it cuts it up.
Sure.
And then you have a pulp and then you just take your mold and deckle, which I'm sure you've done. And then you just do that process and it's just beautiful. Like that's the, it really feels like magic. I mean, the whole process feels like a sense, you have a sense of alchemy happening.
Okay, so what color is the paper after you've made it?
So it can, it's more like a golden brown because it looks like it's going to be like a straight up gold when you when it's wet as as the pulp. I mean, but when it dries, you know, and it'll take, you know, based on like the type of drying mechanism I use, it can take like a couple days to dry. It can turn into like a light or like a darker brown with maybe a bit of a gold tint to it. And then I sometimes mix it with raw cotton from a black owned farm, which is a whole other story that I source that from.
Okay.
And I, and it's a little lighter. It's more of like a tan.
Wow.
So I'm just using fibers that are related to my ancestry and it's just a way to connect.
And then so if people were making paper like that in Cameroon, then what were they using to write on it? Or were they using it for other things like wrapping things? Or?
I guess, I mean, they could be using it for wrapping. I'm just using it, like, I guess, just to, like, a lot of the documentation, a lot of I will recreate some documents related to my ancestry. So I'll print, that's when I'll use the paper in that way. Or I take a lot of photographs and do, I create, I work with somebody, Courtney Senich, to make copper photogravures. And it's just like taking a photograph and you're just taking a step back and making an etching of it. And the reason I do this process and print it on the paper is because if you take a original photograph and then you take a step back and make a print out of it, it's like a memory. So it's like how I have relationships with memory. Like I'm never going to see the sharp image that my parent, my ancestors might have seen, but if I take a step back and I print, take a photograph and print it, that's a step away from that sharp, clear image. So it's a little softer.
Okay.
And so that's why I like to do this like print process after I take a photograph. So I'm saying, okay, I'm never going to see what my ancestors have seen. So I'm just playing with that tension and I'll make a print out of it on that paper related to my ancestors.
That sounds amazing.
So it's like, I'm doing everything I possible, like by all means necessary to connect to my ancestors.
Wow. That sounds amazing. So cause I'm imagining it like this sort of golden brown with roughened edges and then like an etching of a modern day scene on it. And it just so almost like a collage.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it could be a photograph, like say, like a knife that I imagine an ancestor I might have had for protection. It could have been like a front, you know, an ancestor of mine who was on the frontier in Kentucky, and she, like frontier knives, they were used for cooking, everything. But also, I can imagine as an enslaved woman on the frontier, she might have had moments where she needed that for protection.
Sure.
Or a crown that I was given by a tribal leader while we were in Cameroon before we went deeper into the country. His tribe gave us these gorgeous handcrafted crowns made out of natural materials like leaves and like these stems. They were gorgeous. And they put them on us and did this ritual before we went out. And the one thing I always love to tell, and I have to make a point of saying when I tell that story, is that this tribal leader was a PhD professor at the main university in the city. So I want people to be very clear. You know, it's just people there are just more connected to their traditions than we are. But they are highly educated. You can be a tribal leader. You can be doing these rituals and be highly educated.
Right. It's not a Tarzan movie,
it
folks.
Is not a Tarzan movie.
So let's just move past that
right
now.
I always have to make that clear.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to make sure we talk about the exhibit that you've got coming on. So what is the name of this exhibit? Where is it? Tell me all about it.
Yeah, so it's called Open Your Eyes to Water. It's a dual site exhibition, which I'm really so excited about and honored. It's a solo exhibition, so it's at Root Division is one location, which is on Mission, not too far away from Market Street. And then it's the other location is at 500 Cap Street in the Mission. And it's,
so it's in two different places?
Yeah, it's in two different locations, which is incredible. Okay. I'm so honored that I've been given the opportunity to show. It's like about like 10 years of my work. A lot of, I think they're about five films of my work. Because I'm a filmmaker, like I said, also. So short films are included in this exhibition.
Okay.
So one is a three-channel video called Encoded, which is features a lot of that footage from when I went to Senegal. And then also from Kentucky. So it's just kind of like me trying to connect to my ancestors and playing, again, with that tension of me knowing I'll never get to see exactly what they saw, but I'm just desperately trying to cross the ocean to get to know who they are. And just like picking up on these scenes. And it includes a bunch of field recordings in that video, just tracing again my journey through sound, but also visually. So it's called Encoded. That's a three channel video. So three channel means three separate screens.
Oh, okay.
Playing at the same time. So yeah, so it's like immersive experience. So I love it. I love when people are able to experience that piece because it's very immersive. And I just want people to be, again, transport them. Another piece, which is one of my most emotional and close to home pieces, is called Liberation Through Redaction. And it's at 500 Cap Street. And it's, again, it's another immersive piece where it's an entire room that's filled with, there's like a, this entire room that's there's like a kind of like a dirt floor, and then I have plants growing out that I've planted.
Okay,
and that's I've planted with goldenrod, which is from Kentucky, which I saw when I visited my family from Kentucky, and then that's kind of tucked underneath large stems of pampas grass, which you see all around California, especially in the Bay Area and Portillo Hill and whatnot. And that's supposed to be representing, it's really long and flowy, and that's kind of representing the California dream because that's representing my family's property in central California. So it's like the pampas, so the goldenrod from Kentucky is hidden. So that's like the family roots, the family history that was kind of lost before our migration. And then our migration eventually from Chicago to California, and the pampas grass is just this wavy, flowy California dream kind of idea about migration, how, you know, they came from this one place and those roots are there, they're hidden because we didn't know about our Kentucky roots until we did some research. But they were there all along, and we came out west and migrated out here. And it's this field of grasses. And so I want people to go to this because the field of grasses, there's a wonderful scent from the goldenrod, so that kind of like captures you. It's a multi-sensory experience. But then they're surrounding a pedestal made of soil. And the soil is soil from my family's property in Central California. It's like a five acre empty property in the farmland. And then soil, this time, I've made this twice. This time, it's not just that soil. It's Bay Area soil that I got from Recology because they create soil. Well, they resell or reproduce soil that people bring there. And then so that's mixed together into a rammed earth process. So it's like a pedestal. So there's a pedestal we made using rammed earth process, which is a very laborious process. But it's a soil pedestal made of this rammed earth process, which can date back to different times, different places in West Africa, but also here in Latin America. And it's holding a document called, that I've called Liberation Through Redaction, that is from 1835. It's a copy of a will that mentions all my ancestors from this particular group, mm-hmm. when they were, it was, the document is the will of the person who enslaved them. And sure. it mentions every year that they're going to be freed.
Wow.
So, for example, my great-great-great-grandfather Martin, it says, you know, he's going to be freed. You know, he's going to go live with this person and he'll be freed in 1856.
Okay.
But what I did is it's called Liberation Through Redaction. So I redacted every word that had nothing to do with their humanity. So you don't see anything about trade, about them belonging to somebody.
Got
so
it.
What you end up seeing are the words, the man Martin Free. So the whole document, it's about maybe 11 different enslaved people. And you just see their name, the woman Free, for Charlotte, or, you know, like I said, for John, the man John Free. So it's just kind of like they were free all along. They were never enslaved. And it's just kind of reclaiming this narrative. And so that document, made out of my own paper again, uh-huh. but that's like this raw cotton I get from a black owned farm. And it's sitting on this lovely pedestal of soil, my family soil, representing that honoring the people who came before us and that move, that migration west.
Well, this sounds amazing. We're almost out of time,
yeah.
so I want to make sure our listening audience knows where and for how long and how they can see
yeah.
this exhibit.
Absolutely. So the show is up until May 16th.
Okay.
And you can go see it at Root Division. Again, and then there's also at 500 Cap Street.
Okay.
So they'll be up until May 16th. So I hope you get a chance to see and just experience my migration and just kind of my family's migration, just kind of taken in. And all the experiences are pretty much immersive. So I want you to experience my ancestors through the senses.
And if people want to find out more about your artwork outside of these two galleries, how would they go about doing that?
You can go to my website, TrinaMRobinson.com.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Trina, I could talk to you for hours more, but unfortunately we're out of time. So I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
You're welcome. People of Earth, art, music, shows coming through. There's so much to touch your mind. We are so fortunate to live in a place that encourages artistic expression in all of its forms. I'm about to turn the mic over to Mr. Ford, who's going to pleasure your ear hole. So because she mentioned water, I'm going to have to play Graham Central Station's Water. So until next week, my friends, ta-ta and toodly-doo.
Until your well is right, you don't miss.